The Locked On NFL Draft Podcast on a Monday morning. I'm John Ledyard from thedraftnetwork.com, along with Trevor Sikkema, also from thedraftnetwork.com. Trevor, we are at the midway point of the NFL season. Can you just take a second, take a deep breath, and digest that? How did
Listen,
we get
man,
here?
I was fine with it like 2 weeks ago when I brought it up for the first time. You're the one who needs to mentally prepare yourself.
I do. I don't. It just seems like it's gone even faster than it always goes fast, but it feels like it's really flying. I mean, college football season's basically over at this point. We've got like 3 or 4 more weeks left of the regular season. NFL season's flying by as well. We really want to take some time the next 2 days and really look at our boards, look at how our top 20, 30 or so players have done so far this season, where it looks like we maybe missed on some guys, where it looks like, well, I don't want to say missed just yet. We've got a long way to go in the evaluation for everybody, but who's hitting so far and, who's standing out so far in a positive way. And as we kind of progress and looking down the board, maybe at some guys that should have been, maybe
you gotta remember the first rule of scouting, John.
Yes.
If one of the guys that you were high on hits early, you claim the crap out of it and you never look at him ever again.
Yes.
And if somebody you were high on isn't doing well, you got to wait it out. You got to wait the full 3. You could go 3 full years if you want. And just
wait.
You
can even go 4. Blame it on it. There's so many things.
You could wait till they go to a different team and then claim it later. That's the first rule of scouting.
Blame the coach. Blame the protection. Blame.
I do.
Oh, well, yeah. The hard part about what we do, Trevor, is a lot of the time it's legit to blame other factors. But it always feels like a cop out to other people, and sometimes it can be used as a cop out. So
a little bit, but, you know,
it's difficult. It's a fine line to walk, I think, to figure out that balance between making sure you're not making excuses for yourself and your evaluations and not getting any better, but at the same time understanding that, man, like, what if I'd have just thrown in the towel on Jared Goff after year one, like everybody who hated him did, you know? If I had him as
like
QB1 and then was like, okay, yeah, he's trash, you know, and didn't wait and wasn't patient, and then now look at him, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So that's the thing. Like, you don't want to give up on your guys too quick, you know. So just, you know, everybody that's – I see people do that, and I just, you know, stand by your guys. Stand by your evaluations. And if you get 3 years of – you know, you can certainly say, yeah, it looks like I'm going to be wrong on him or I've been wrong on him, but so far this guy does this and this better than what I thought. But – man, don't throw in the towel on your guys super early. You know, even Dak, like, I had a fifth or sixth round grade on Dak, which obviously is not going to go in my favor even this long, far down the road. But, like, Dak was, like, one of the people who were, like, best quarterback in the league, you know, better than Wentz, better than Goff. Now I think everybody would say he's clearly not better than those two. And that kind of career has kind of revealed that to us as it's moved on. So, I mean, you know, you just never want to throw in the towel too early on your evaluations. Trust yourself as an evaluator for sure, but at the same time, we've got to look at these guys critically and think about how they're doing this season and evaluate them through a lens that's going to be fair. Quentin Nelson, the top player on both of our boards, correct?
Yes, Quentin Nelson was 1 for me. Yep.
I haven't studied every game of Quentin Nelson or anything. I've talked to Brandon Thorne a lot about him. I've seen a good bit of his play. I think he's been very good for a rookie. He has not been a Pro Bowl player year one. People talked about him like he would be. I did not expect him to be. I expected him to come in, start, and play at a solid level for a starter as an offensive lineman in the NFL. That is extremely difficult to do. There just are not many without a ton of help in pass protection and scheme that come in year one as rookies, as offensive linemen, and dominate. You know, we just don't see that very often.
And we talk about, you know, being comfortable and being confident in your first year in the NFL, and it's so tough to do, especially when you're mentally evaluating somebody. And not saying that Quentin fell short in that area. I actually really loved him in that area, kind of above the shoulders, the mentality that he had for the game. But playing offensive line is so much about chemistry. It's about being comfortable. It's about not only the guys who are next to you in the trenches that are also doing the blocking, but having a better recognition of the guys in front of you too, knowing what's going to come at you, the tendencies and the speed of certain NFL defensive linemen. And so, you know, for you to expect that any rookie offensive lineman would be an all-pro in his first year is kind of that you're just asking way too much. You're not really taking in everything. I mean, you know, if they do, hats off, like phenomenal, because that just doesn't happen very often. But in terms of Quentin Nelson and being number one on the board, and there might be some other rookies who are playing better than him in terms of where they are in their talent, but I mean, no way down on Quentin Nelson at all. So, yeah.
No, I think that people have to remember too. I think defensive lines, especially in the interior, is the deepest position group in the NFL. I mean, last year's draft class was supposedly a weaker year for interior defensive linemen. And look at how well they're playing across the board. Like, almost every single one is playing at a really high level, you know, even far down the draft. So, man, it's just been like watching that position group just continue. And then, of course, this year's group coming out is going to be unbelievable. And probably next year's group will have a good handful of guys, too, just looking across the league right now. But, I mean, it just feels like it's so many good interior defensive linemen every year out of the NFL, and they're pro ready, and there's deep rotation of guys. We forget about that deep rotation of fresh bodies on a defensive line, and all talented on most teams. The depth is great on most teams, and these offensive linemen have to be out there every single snap. You know, so it's just a huge transition, I think. And so for Quentin Nelson, I think he's handled that really well. He's definitely not been unbelievable or anything. You've definitely seen him get taken to the woodshed a couple times. Think that's absolutely going to happen, and I think by year three we're going to see him absolutely live up to this standard of being the best overall player. But has he been the best player in this class right now? No, but he's got a lot of time to prove and to live up to that, and I believe that he will. Roquan Smith was high for both of us, right?
Was he two for you?
He was two for me, actually. Yeah,
he was two for me as well.
It's been tough sledding, I think, for him, from what I've seen.
He missed all tackles. The training camp.
Yeah, he missed all camp, and that's really hard.
Who, you know, like, it's the same thing, like, with Vita Vea, with the Buccaneers. Like, people are trying to evaluate Vita Vea's game right now. He missed all of training camp. He didn't even play one padded practice of training camp, and then he missed time into the regular season, too. Like, you're not even like a rookie that, like, you're like pre-rookie stage still, and they're throwing you out there in like regular season games that actually matter. And so it's the same thing with Roquan Smith. To me, he should still be training camp right now, really. Yeah.
No, I feel like there's just going to be a learning curve with him that's, you're probably not going to see him peak till year two. I mean, you just can't. It's a position that's so mental, and a defense that really requires a lot of their linebackers. And I think you've seen the flashes with them for sure, but it's just the consistency is probably going to be all over the place year one. Darius Geis, obviously, he was number three for me. He obviously.
Who's the rest of your five? Who's three, four, five?
Josh Rosen, Bradley Chubb. Chubb has like eight sacks or something.
Wait, who was a bunch of them. Rosen was three?
Rosen was four for me.
Geis was three, Rosen was four.
Chubb was five.
Okay.
Landry was six. Barkley was seven.
Okay. I had Derwin at three. Derwin. Bradley at four. Darius at five. Minka at six. Landry at seven. Barkley at eight.
Man, Derwin is defensive rookie of the year. Right. You know? Like,
yeah. I was having this conversation with Ben Solak this weekend. And, you know, I know we'll get to Denzel Ward, or we can get into him now. I don't care. Denzel Ward's had a great year, I think. And I even got to see him in person when he faced off against the Buccaneers, and he got to go up against both of a little bit of DeSean Jackson, a little bit of Mike Evans. And he's playing really, really well for a rookie. And it was kind of good to see him get a lot of the most out of his talent. It's such a playing rookie corner, man, is so tough. And he seems to be adapting really well to it. But I think Ben was saying that a safety hasn't won it in, I can't remember the year he said, but it's just really, it's just really hard for rookie safeties to win defensive player of the year. But if anybody's going to do it, it's Derwin, because he gets sacks and interceptions. I know the interception total is a little bit lower right now, but if he finishes the year with, like, you know, I think he's at three or four sacks right now. If he finishes the year with, let's say, three or four picks and like maybe like 7-8 sacks, I think he gets defensive rookie of the year. Do you?
Yeah, oh, absolutely I do. And I think that's the thing. Not a lot of rookies either put up the numbers, or we used to be such a tackle-based. I mean, our analysis was so, I remember it was every year would be like, oh my gosh, can somebody get to 200 tackles, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, tackles don't matter as a statistic. If tackles are great, like the actual idea of making tackles, but as a statistic, doesn't make any difference. You can get 20 tackles because you got targeted in coverage underneath, gave up a catch, and made the tackle every time. You know, great, but you still suck at what you were supposed to do. So it just doesn't make any difference by itself, the tackle number. You
got
to have
the full context. Derwin's got one sack and three and a half sacks, one interception.
Mm-hmm. He's had a couple. He's had a bunch of pass breakups too.
In fact, if he could squeeze it a little better, six pass breakups
for a safety already. He's a baller, man. Like, and it doesn't even say
to win defensive rookie of the year.
I don't know. I don't know, because Denzel Ward and Jair Alexander, who, by the way, we both had first round grades on, and they were your only corners with first round grades, right? Were those your only two?
Hold on, I'm looking at it. Which one did you say?
Technically, first round. I said Jair Alexander and Denzel Ward.
Yes, like Josh Jackson would have been like a high two for me.
Okay, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Those were the only two I had in the first round too, and they've been the best two corners so far. And I think that neither of those guys have. Well, Ward got two picks in the first game. He's probably got pretty good numbers. Jair's got one, I think, but at the same time, I don't know that. Well, the sacks will help Derwin too. I hate that people just look at the numbers, but I know you're right. That is how the award.
That's the award. That's literally the award. They have to do it.
Yeah. I think both of those, or all three of those guys, probably are going to be in competition for it. We'll see if Jair can stay healthy and out there on the field. Yeah, Ward's got three picks already this year, which is obviously going to probably help him a good bit.
Where did you have Nick Chubb and Sony Michelle on your board?
Nick Chubb was 24th on my board, one of my first second-round picks. And Michelle, okay. You said?
Yeah.
Michelle was 8th on my board. He got hurt again, but he's going to be bad. I think he's going to be bad.
You had him 8? 8 overall?
I had him 8 overall, yeah.
Ooh. Wow. Yeah. I had Nick Chubb 14, and I had Sony Michelle 17.
Yeah. I mean, been thrilled with Michelle, obviously.
Sure, yeah.
300-yard games. I mean, he's looked great. One thing I will say about Michelle is that I don't think he's looked quite – vision's been great. Decision-making's been great. Just finishes runs behind his pads consistently. I just don't see that same burst yet. I know he had that knee scope and everything in the right before the season started and then missed a couple games. And I just am not quite sure that he's at 100% speed right now. Compared to where usually, remember that like play against, was it Alabama, where he like took off down the sideline and like tiptoed the sideline, and just like blew by like dudes who were like Minka and those guys who were going to be like top picks. And it was like, holy, this kid's just got jets.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that like type of burst from Michelle, that like special, like I'm going to change speeds on you and just leave you in the dust type of burst. Yeah. And he had that in droves at Georgia. I mean, that was, even people who weren't that crazy about Michelle thought, you know, that was the one big thing about him. And I haven't quite seen that level yet. But, I mean, if he gets that back, I mean, the dude is just, he's just such a good, pure running back. And he's already starting to contribute more in the passing game, even though they have James White there for that role. And then Nick Chubb, I mean, I think he's been really good for what they give him. You know, I mean, just in the Steeler game yesterday, he made, I know it's Bud Dupree, but he made Bud Dupree miss in the backfield, turn to like a loss of three into a nice game, bounced it outside. And so he's shown the ability to improvise when he gets opportunities, which I like. I think he's going to continue to get better and better this season, I think. Not as good as Barkley, but.
Well, for sure. But
the thing about Barkley, and I know people always laugh because they're like, oh, you guys hated Barkley. Well, we had him like, I had him 7th, you had him 8th. So, I mean, we obviously love Saquon Barkley, but there were reservations about his game as a pure running back, which made him difficult to kind of grade out because that is his position. But I think, like, we would have agreed. I mean, I know I said, and I'm pretty sure you said before the draft, like, Saquon Barkley was the best offensive weapon in last year's draft. Like, there wasn't a receiver better than him or anything. Like, to me, I just thought he was, if you just needed a weapon – and you can argue whether the Giants really did with all the weapons they have. But if you just needed a weapon for your offense, like, he was going to be able to do a ton of things for you. If you had the quarterback position and the line nailed down, like, you could really maximize this guy and do some special stuff with him. So just an interesting player to evaluate from a grading like scale perspective. Like, what do you, you know, what you value about his game? Because I think pure running back, I think he still leaves a lot to be desired. Unbelievable athlete in space, second level. I mean, ability to bounce off guys when he gets going, obviously. And I mean, he's clearly the top offensive rookie in the league. I mean, there's between other guys getting hurt and stuff like that, and Barkley being pretty good. I know the numbers aren't like insane for him as a rusher or anything, but the dude's gonna catch. Like, he has 58 catches already this season. It's insane.
He has 58.
58. He's gonna have like 120 catches this year, and Eli's just gonna keep checking it down. So, wow. I mean, he's gonna keep getting like 9 catches a game.
Oh my goodness! I didn't realize it. That's out of control.
It's absolutely nuts, dude. I mean, it's terrible for the Giants and their offense because, I mean, he's good, obviously, but you don't want your running back to have 9 catches, like, especially when most of them are on the line of scrimmage. Like, when you have Odell and Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard, you want to be throwing the ball down the field a little bit more. But we know that's not going to happen with Eli, and I don't think they're going to bench Eli. So it looks good for Barkley right now.
Is there a player that you just glance over, like, let's just say your top 30? Mm-hmm. Is there a guy that you should have been higher on that you wish you were higher on? And then is there a guy that you should have been lower on?
The
guy who I should have been higher on was Frank Ragnow.
Okay, he's high on him. He was 21 on my board.
He was 26 for me, but like he's one of the best football players from this draft.
I think he will be. Yeah. I think he will be. He's gotten better every week too. Pass protection's been some issues, but I mean, Will Hernandez has been better than him, I think, even this year. But both all have had their issues. All the offensive linemen have had their issues, I think. McGlinchey,
I feel like Frank Ragnow's been. He's really good.
He's gotten better and better, I think, every single. And obviously, I mean, Ragnow was one of my favorite players in that class. He was my top center. I know some people like Price and some people like Daniels more.
Yeah, he was my top center too. He's 22.
I don't know. He's playing left guard now, but I mean, guys, that if I look over my top 30 and I see guys within my top 30 that I should have been higher on, is that the question here?
Yeah. Or do you think you nailed it for the most part right now?
Yeah, I don't see anybody within my top 30 I really would be higher on right now. I see some guys that I'm like.
Where'd you rank Vea?
Vea was 28 for me, second round grade. Wasn't wild on Vea. I actually think maybe I should have been lower on Vea. Higher on Daron Payne and just trusted that upside a little more. He was 44 for me, which is still a good grade for me, but he's been a real force this season. He's been a real ball.
I think I should have been lower on Vea too. He was 23 for me, and I knew that the Bucs had a really good chance of taking him around the middle of the first round, and so I kind of let that determine where I kind of put him along a big board, because I knew that he was going to likely be a first round prospect and a mid round for like a mid pick in the first round. And I was like, all right, well, maybe, you know, maybe there is the better upside that I need to be betting on. And not saying, you know, he was, it's the same thing as Roquan, you know, you're not totally judging him because he missed all training camp with that injury, but I just don't know how effective he will be in the long term of things. So I'm not really sure. So he's definitely someone who is a really good case for me in a couple of different ways. One, adjusting my board to what I might be hearing from the NFL, sometimes taking that with a grain of salt. And two, even though there's a player who might have a good amount of impact as what they are, depending on what that is in a scheme and an overall impact to the game, I might have to take that into consideration too. Because a big board where I know the nature of it is, yes, you were just looking at how good of a football player this guy is at his position, and you kind of just want to identify how good of a football player he is there. Because that's why, obviously, we don't have a top five littered with like just quarterbacks or something, like just passers or something like that. This does go into play of how good they are at football players at their position. That I think still has to come into account maybe more than I counted for it last year when I was ranking guys, is where they're going to play and how they're going to impact the game overall. So
yeah, I think with Vea, just not enough behind the line of scrimmage type of play from him. Like, I just.
But there actually is.
You think there will be? Maybe there will be. I mean,
he doesn't even know what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
Like, there are a couple plays, like, from
he
last
didn't at
week,
Washington, like, though. He technically, he wasn't that good.
Well, the problem at Washington is, everybody. And I've been trying to tell people this, the product at Washington is so weird because a lot of the teams in Washington, a lot of the offensive lines are really light. So Washington, or that's just in the Pac-12 in general. So what Washington does with a lot of their guys is they just overinflate him. I mean, Vea played at 350 pounds and he had no business being that big. Yep. But the reason why he was that big is because just nobody in the Pac-12 could handle him at that size because he was still decently athletic as a 350-pounder. So what they would do with Vea is they'd set him up like almost like a three tech or like heads up against a guard, and they would just have him go from like guard to center to guard almost straight across the line of scrimmage, not really having a purpose, just saying, hey, take up all these blocks. Just take everybody. Just make them worry about you. And that's what he did, and he did it really well, but like that's not a translatable position to the NFL. You can't do that. You get just thrown away. Like they just won't care about you because you don't have a purpose in what you're doing. And you're noticing early on with Vea, with the Buccaneers, he doesn't know his purpose of what he's doing yet. Like he'll push somebody into the backfield, get really good push, get leverage, push him almost 2-3 yards back into the backfield, will not impact the play at all. Like won't even care about the ball carrier, doesn't know where the ball's going. So it's a weird, I don't know, it's a really weird mix for him right now. So I'm still up in the air with that.
So three names I want to throw out there. Mike McGlinchey has been an absolute stud. And
yeah.
He was my top tackle, 15th overall, first round grade. He's been a stud for San Francisco. Still hiccups here and there for sure. He's been a stud for San Francisco, though.
And he was 21 for me.
Yeah, he's going to be a future building block that you absolutely got to have. And people ripped on him and hated on him because of the Georgia game and a couple plays in the Georgia game when really he was really good in that game for the most part. But he had all the traits you want, and I think he's balled out. I think Maurice Hurst is going to end up being one of my biggest hits in the draft because he was 9th overall. For me,
and obviously, he was 16 for me.
What do you go, 5th round? I mean, I know the health had a lot to do with it, too. What do you go, 5th round or something? I think you went 5th round.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, like, because he's out there playing, and he's just absolutely dominating people. He's better and better every single week. Pass rush moves, athleticism, you can see it all kind of on display for Maurice Hurst. Taking on doubles better. Just a guy, just a great kid, I think, works super hard, but also just ability to play on all three downs is so valuable in today's NFL. To get that in the 5th round is just, I mean, the Raiders did a lot of wrong things, but that was one thing made it extremely right. Then there's this little case of a guy, I don't know if you've heard of him, Trevor, is a linebacker named Darius Leonard. Who if you keep scrolling down my board,
and where was
you
get he for you?
Down to the one, where is he? He's 140 something, I thought. No, maybe he's not. I thought he was in there, but maybe. Where is he? Where is Darius Leonard?
I didn't scout Darius Leonard, so
163.
He's not on my board because I did a top 100 and I didn't look at him nearly enough, so he's just not even a name on my top 100.
One spot above Marcel Aitman, though, so I got that right.
didn't who was it? Not McShay. Who was it? Who didn't have Marcel Aitman as like one of the top 45
that
receivers?
That was
Kuiper?
I think McShay? It was one of was them. It? Yeah. One of them didn't have him.
Like they
there.
Listed 45 wide receivers.
It might have been, was it Mayock?
And Marcel Aitman wasn't one of them.
It was Kuiper, I think. You're right. And we were like, we saw that right before the draft. We were like, neither of us liked Aitman at all. But we were like, well, Aitman's not getting drafted. Because we were like, if he listed 45, not one NFL team has talked up Aitman, which I thought was, funny. I mean, there was a lot of misconception floating around about Aitman before the draft. But anyway, Darius Leonard, 163 on my board. I honestly worried he was soft after watching his South Carolina State tape. I mean, I talked with Mike Renner about this. I talked with so many people about his tape. Michael Kist. I talked to so many people this guy, sometimes he didn't really seem like he wanted to be out there. Like, it was like, man, is he this slow of a processor, or is he just not bring it physically? And we backed down from blockers in the FCS. And I was like, I don't know that flip can, or that switch can really be flipped. Like, I never really seen a guy switch that, or, flip that switch when he gets to the NFL. You just don't see it very often coming from that level of competition. I thought the game would be too big, too fast for him. And if anything, he's looked way more comfortable in the NFL, which is crazy and maddening, but as an evaluator. But Yeah, I mean, I felt like I put out a lot of tape there of Darius Leonard that was just like, this guy don't have it. Like, I mean, there's tape out there of him backing down from FCS blockers and like not being like sitting at the second level and getting pinned down. And then when he didn't test well, it was really kind of the nail in the coffin for me. I was like, man, I don't know what there is to get excited about here. Like, but he's gone out, and if I had to make a top five defensive rookie of the year, which we will tomorrow. But not to give too much away, but he'll be on it because he's been great. I mean, the range, but also I think he's just been really naturally instinctive, which is crazy because I never really seen a linebacker just be as uninstinctive as he was in college and then gain that in the NFL. So mm-hmm. I have no idea what has caused the huge leap with Leonard. Was he hurt last year? I know he was kind of banged up at his pro day, which I didn't learn about till after the draft, like in the summer or something.
You hate to see it.
But man, he looks like he's going to way outplay my projection. He looks like a first round type of talent this season. And what I like is that he's gotten better and better every single week, even in the NFL. Like, I think he's processing quicker and getting the ball sooner. And his strip the other day yesterday was crazy. I don't know if you saw it. He like slid over, met the running back in the hole, and literally punched the ball, just punched it straight out of his arms. I was like, this guy's like, he's playing with people. That's like a veteran move. Like, not even worrying about tack. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I don't know what happened. It's one of the crazier leaps I've seen for a player, especially coming from an FCS talent level.
Yep.
But there's a couple like that every year, man. They get you that are just like, man, where did this come from? Like, this guy, you know, he flipped that switch and now he just plays like a totally different guy. And so, you know, more power to him. He's been absolutely awesome and definitely has proven
me wrong. Marcus Davenport so far might be that guy for me. I just didn't.
How low were you on him? He's 47th for me, but I feel like that's pretty accurate.
That 67th for me, but it's on an adjusted board where I obviously did not get to all the prospects that everybody else did. So like Davenport would have been, I would have graded Davenport out as like probably like a third round guy. Yeah. So
he was like a late second for me. I like Davenport. I just thought people saying he was top 10 were crazy. And
I think that I let that get maybe a little bit into my head because people were saying that he was top 10 and I watched him get bodied at the Senior Bowl most of the Senior Bowl.
And he got bodied a ton last night. I know he ended up with two sacks. I missed the first one, to be honest. I was writing something and I totally missed it. I looked on Twitter. I was like, but I saw the second one. I was like, I mean, this is a pass set. Like, this is just embarrassing. So, I mean, like, and he was on the ground a couple times too, and there's going to be those ups and downs with him, but definitely the flash plays are there. The question is that growth linear for him?
Yeah, if he has the production that he has and the flashes that he has as just a rookie, that means he's outplaying what I thought he could be. He really is. Like, I'm going to take the L. I might take the L pretty quick on Marcus Davenport because of how low I was on him. So
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, maybe you should be higher, but also, was he worth two first-round picks? Like, I don't think we'll ever get there, but we'll see. I mean, if the sky really is the limit for him like people think it is, then obviously, like, if he can reach, like, a Cameron Jordan type of ability in his career, you know, you've got two guys of that caliber on that line, it's pretty hard to say that that isn't worth two first-round picks. But we'll see if that happens. I still have my doubts about that. But, I mean, across the board, really, just looking at so many different players, you're like, I feel really good about most of my first-round grades, except for Ronald Jones. I mean, he's literally the only first-round grade I could say I've been disappointed with, which is crazy to say. But, I mean, Quentin Nelson, like I said, Roquan Smith, I understand his situation. Obviously, guys being hurt, but Rosen, I think, has been great in a bad situation. I think that, you know, his, I don't know if you saw much of his comeback win over the 49ers yesterday, but
I read about it. I didn't get to see
tremendous
it.
Stuff. He had some absolute dimes, some great throws in that game. He just looks so, he's been really, in terms of what he can control, has been about as good as I could have hoped for in such a horrible situation. Chubb's mm-hmm. been a beast. Landry's been a beast. Barkley's been a beast. Michelle was a beast, and then he got banged up. But Maurice Hurst has been great. That's not my top nine. Minkah Fitzpatrick's had some ups and downs. He's got to tackle better, but I think other than that, he's been, you know, really impressive. I know Miami loves him. Isaiah Wynn hurt out for the year. Denzel Ward's been a beast. Baker Mayfield's been as good as I think you could ask him to be in Cleveland. There's certainly going to be bumps in the road for all the rookie quarterbacks.
But no, he'll be fine, man.
Yeah,
he'll
I don't feel bad about that one at all. Jair Alexander's
get him a real coach, and he'll be fine.
Yeah, McGlinchey, Derwin James, Justin Reed's been awesome for the Texans. Already has two picks. He's getting better and better every week. Our boy Jeffers, the new covers the Texans, said he's been absolutely great, making up for all their bad cornerback play and stuff like that. So all those guys, Josh Sweat is kind of the unknown for the group, obviously, with where he was drafted and the team that drafted him.
Yeah, he was 22 for me.
Yeah, he's 18 for me. Hasn't had a lot of chance to play. The only first-round pick that I can legit say, that I gave out, I'm disappointed in is Ronald Jones. I just don't know what's going to happen. Like, he could be the biggest miss of the draft for me. I had him 15 or 16.
Yep. I had him 28.
Was there any hope? I heard he was getting some first-team reps and any hope.
I mean, that's only because Peyton Barber was hurt. I mean, Peyton's not going to give. Peyton Barber is an undrafted free agent who plays football for reasons greater than his own. Like, he does it to feed his family. Like Peyton Barber has a starting job right now. You will have to pry it from his cold, dead hands. And, like, Ronald Jones is in no way the running back to do that.
I see Peyton Barber at 19 carries for 85 yards against the Bengals, and Ronald Jones had 2 for -3. So nice. I know you've said that maybe there's some, I don't know what's the right word, hesitation on Ronald Jones' part with the NFL and a lot of the things that are going on, and just it seems a little big for him right now on a scale outside of even football, maybe. So hard to see that stuff as an evaluator, but I'll still be very salty and have trouble trusting small backs in my future. This one will damage me, Trevor. Just don't know if I can quite get on board.
Sorry, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It ain't going to get better.
Dang. So you think that's it? You think it's a miss?
I don't. I won't say it's a miss yet. But
let's see.
Like,
let's give him another
year.
You're not gonna get
much more this year, is what I'm telling you.
All right, that's fine. I can deal with it this year, but I need him to sharpen up, pay off in the end. Because that my first round grades are looking great. I just need a little more out of you, Ronald Jones. I want to be 19 for 19.
Okay. No, it's okay.
No,
that's all right.
I take
it. It's okay to admit that you suck. It's fine.
Has there been one player for you like Leonard that you said Davenport, I guess, has kind of been that guy, but
yeah, Davenport was a big miss for me. I thought Bo Scarborough was going to be a lot better than he was. He's not even on a team. He was my RB6, I think, but I think he was in the 40s on my grades just because I looked at Bo Scarborough and I was like, we're overthinking this dude. Like, giant, fast, strong running back. Like, I'm not going to overthink him. And
he was bad.
He ends up getting cussed by Dallas. So, you. That was great. Yeah, whatever. I don't care. shut up.
Carlton Davis, you said you wanted to mention. You said that there's been some good things with Carlton Davis that have encouraged.
Yeah, Carlton Davis has been good. So this week he got AJ Green a lot. He got a touchdown thrown on him while AJ was on him. But with Carlton, it kind of seems like every week he is taking lumps, but they're not like, I would still say I'm encouraged by the things that he is doing. Like, when I watch him struggle, he doesn't make a lot of the same mistakes twice, and he seems to always be getting better the different kinds of wide receivers that he gets to go up against. So I really do think that he's going to be a future number one corner for the Buccaneers. And so I've been pretty damn impressed by him. And I was somewhat lower on him just because I was worried that he wasn't a guy for turnovers, and I thought he was a little too physical, sometimes getting penalties, but he's cleaned up a lot of that in the NFL early on, and so he's been really encouraging, yeah. Yep.
One other guy I want to give a shout-out to real quick before we wrap up. Quentin Meeks got his first start for Jacksonville yesterday.
Dude.
And then he got hurt, I saw. I don't know what happened yet. I don't know if they've said what happened yet to him.
So stupid.
So, yeah.
The draft is stupid.
It's, I mean, unbelievable.
Why do we do this podcast?
Yeah, I don't. Jeez.
You got escalated
quickly.
Who, I mean, you know how to explain it better than I. He was, what is he, a coach's kid? Had the size, had the production, everything you want above the shoulders, ideal measurables. Sure, wasn't the most athletic dude, but had certain production, played plenty at the position when he was in college. This is not an undrafted guy.
Right. Not at all. And he tested great.
Didn't make any sense.
And he tested great. So I don't know what's going to end up going on with him.
If I would have picked Quentin Meeks instead of MJ Stewart in the second round, I would have gone, all right, cool.
Right, yep.
And instead, Quentin Meeks goes undrafted.
Mind-boggling. Mind-boggling that not that he didn't go in the second. I would have him. I would have him on this board. Yeah, I had him in the late second round. No. Oh, third round. Sorry. Third round? No. Yeah, early third round. Sorry. Late second, early third round range. I do like a mid-day two type of range for these guys. I had him in that type of range, and I thought if he goes day three, I'll get it because he doesn't always play quite as athletic as he tested, but I still think there's the potential for him too. I think he got into trouble technically at times, and that kind of put him at a disadvantage, but he was lights out yesterday against the Eagles. He actually should have had two picks, so I guess if you truly be lights out, he would have caught both of those balls, but making plays in coverage all over the place, sticking with guys across the field vertically, breaking on balls in front of them was just a great performance by him. You could tell he'd been studying, he'd been working hard, but like you said, coach's kid, athlete, huge. I mean, tremendous size for a corner. He wore 43 yesterday, Trevor, the number 43, and gross. He still balled out. I mean, what else can you say?
But he's just overcoming adversity everywhere.
Unbelievable to me that he was undrafted, but also an important lesson because when he went undrafted, cannot even tell you how many tweets I got, and I didn't really address any of them, but got so many tweets from people saying, wow, this guy was 53 on your board and went undrafted, like, blah, 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 you know, talking like people do, which I only say that story to tell you it's not over when they go undrafted. Sure, it's going to be an uphill climb, but it's not over, and Quentin Meeks got his first start halfway through the year despite being undrafted, and I think he's going to become a part of that rotation.
What an inspirational tale.
Yes, of course, he got hurt yesterday, so we'll see how that turns out, but there's our thoughts on some of the slate. We didn't get to everybody. Obviously, no way we'll get to everybody. There's guys that we'll try and talk about tomorrow as well. We're going to talk more offensive and defensive rookie of the year candidates. We're going to give you guys our top, who just missed the list and things like that, our top candidates, and then tell you who we would pick right now if we had to for offensive. We've already kind of given it away, I guess, but I mean, it shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody either. So until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.